Cilantro is where it's at.
I'm a cowboy caviar guy.
Gotta get back in time.
So I got fucked into drumming.
Give me them cargo pants.
And like kids were like putting themselves through the walls. I mean, it was.
And you're doxing their like life right now.
Eat one peanut at a time. Dry roasted.
Ooh. It's the 413. Let's tell everybody to listen to our show.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the 413 podcast featuring the PCB peeps. We have Andy.
Hey.
Abby.
Hi.
Bill.
Yo, what up, peeps?
Jared.
Hi.
I am Eric, and we have two special guests on tonight. This is our Tales from the Pits episode. Where are we at this point? Like 52, probably? No, it feels
104.
Like that. Yeah, at least. We want to welcome tonight from Silver Lake Booking, Devin and Peyton. I'll take the long way home until it takes my soul. I know you mean well. Reach out to me.
There's a businessman who wants my soul. Guys,
what up?
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being on. We're really excited to talk. And I want to start out by saying, as a group, we've gone to only one show that you've put on, but it was a banger of a show.
It was so good.
We got to go see Halloween at Hot Plate, and we saw such band. And I don't know how the ticket prices were so low. We saw Blink-182. We saw Green Day. We saw AFI. We saw Weezer. It was amazing. It was a fantastic show.
And bangers, dude. Like the set lists were...
Oh, Bill's personal favorite, Alkaline Trio, was there.
Yeah.
Oh,
I just remember. That's right.
The drink prices were great. The Shirley Temples were a flowing.
They did look a little watered down, but I was told that that's because they were skimping on the Red Dye 40, which I could that's appreciate. Right. Yeah.
They were artisanal with proper measurements, I think.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, it's a craft place.
Not half the bottle. I think they use some pretty high grade grenadine there, so
it was delicious.
Personally, I'm feeling attacked because I had them over for a Friday the 13th party, and I was making Shirley Temples, and I was looking by color, and I just started dumped a half bottle of grenadine into a can of ginger ale, and Andy took a sip and said, "This is good." And then immediately started making a weird face and I think went into sugar shock. So I had to scale that back. But there was a color spectrum from where Hot Plate was and where I was, somewhere in the middle as the average Shirley Temple.
Hot Plate is like dope. It's a really great spot. We were very fortunate to find it. We reached out to them kind of out of the blue for a show a few years ago, and they were just down to help us. Which was great considering we've had really nothing for a while.
Devin, a quick question for you, man. So like reaching out to the owners, they see like just talking to them, they seem hella rad. Were they very receptive to you or did it take
yes. a while to get in? No. So I guess I'll back it up a little bit. So we had, in the middle of 2023, we were kind of looking to host a show for a few friends from Albany who had a lineup with a few bands that were on tour. From one was from Denver, this band Destiny Bond, and then a couple other bands who I can't remember right now. And they said, "Hey, you know, I know you're looking to book shows in Pittsfield. Do you have anything?" We double booked some. There was some date issue, and they said, "Hey, we need this. Is there something available?" And we took a look and I think I reached out to like maybe like 20 or 25 different places I could think of, like just wow. The most random spots and like little tiny bars and like some other, like, you know, the classic like halls and things like that. And yeah. I'm going through my Rolodex of like where I saw shows, you know, growing up as a kid in Pittsfield, and I was like, okay, can I reach out to the girls club? Can I reach out to the library basement? You know, like trying to figure out all these places, and everybody said no. Nobody wanted a part of this at all. Rightfully so, I guess. There was really nothing going on. People get kind of hesitant when you say like, hey, I want to have a punk show here or a hardcore show here. And somebody had mentioned Hot Plates. It was a newer brewery at the time. They had like kind of just opened. The owners are Mike and Sarah. They're super nice. They're from Brooklyn. And they were like a little hesitant at first, maybe just to have that in their space, you know, in a brewery. They have this really nice, you know, tap room that's maybe not built for hardcore shows, but they were receptive. We met and hung out and had a beer, and you know, we hit it off, and they let us have the show, and it went off mostly without a hitch. And we brought a lot of people to their business, and so it's just been this like growing relationship ever since.
That's so rad. That's so rad.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was gonna say, when you hear hardcore show, you're like tap room or tap out room, because one of those is probably more fitting.
Yeah.
So that's actually a question I had for you. So it's good that you mentioned it. Like when you're talking about like kind of setting up your first show, like it's probable that everything will go wrong. You just like forget something that was really crucial. Like, oh, we didn't bring the speakers or something. Do you remember any of the catastrophes that may have happened for that show?
The whole thing was kind of jerry-rigged together, because none of us had a PA. So I felt like I was 16 again, like trying to just call everybody I knew who had a PA. And I didn't call Peyton at the time. He wasn't really involved at this point yet, but there was another young kid I knew, and they had like this kind of janky PA set up. And he was like, yeah, I'll you can borrow it and I'll come and I'll help you run it. And it was good to go. And it was just, you know, you couldn't hear vocals, but we had it like cranked to 11 the whole time. So I think that was kind of a problem. And then also just figuring out, the biggest problem was just figuring out the like volume control for the space. They have upstairs neighbors. It's residential. So they got 10 calls that night from upstairs going like, what are you doing downstairs? This was crazy. So I think there was a little bit of like, you know, we had to figure out what was the best like volume levels we could stay at. They're still running a business. They can have entertainment to a certain time. So we've kind of dialed those in over the last like, you know, 18 months we've been working together. But yeah, I think that was kind of the biggest thing. I felt like it was pretty organized. I'm a project manager by trade. So like having an organized schedule has like worked to my advantage. And growing up in punk and hardcore, like playing in bands, like I know how that works. So I feel like that aspect of it was okay. But yeah, there was definitely some goofy neighbor issues. But what else is new?
Yeah, yeah. I guess I'm not surprised that there's like residential, but at the same time, I guess I'm like, is there neighbors upstairs? Like,
yeah. So they have like three floors of neighbors upstairs, and the building has just been empty for a long time. So when they moved in, people complained. When they had anybody show up, they complained. When people were outside, they complained. When we had shows, they complained. And so now it's gotten to the point where, you know, we found like a pretty good groove. People are okay with it. We have like a, you know, he's got like a newsletter that goes out to all the residents, and like they, you know, just to inform them of what's going on. And we stick within like noise ordinance stuff. So
that's very
like not punk rock, but it's the only way that we can do it. And it's the way that we get to keep like cool shows going on. So
and it's cool for community and everything too. So I think that's pretty dope, you know?
And I mean, to be fair, the police station is connected to Hot Plate, and they've never wandered over on their own being like, this is way too loud.
No. We've made some, like, I've made some preemptive calls, you know, to some police officers that I'm acquainted with, and, you know, just said like, hey, heads up, we're having like a hardcore show. And the last time we had one of these people called. So like, if they called, just don't show up, but they still do. And they have to.
You're like, no street punk bands. I mean, we can
put in fake threats in other buildings nearby. Be like, hey, there you go. Someone's going to jump off this building. You better go there first.
No, on the other side of the city. So then
they have to go all the way over there. Next door. So they can do two in one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, fake crisis. So
exactly.
That we can get everybody away.
Wow.
I hadn't thought of that.
For the scene.
Yeah, for the scene.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, is that a rule for the bands? Like, no anti-police rhetoric?
Oh, no.
Bill's like, oh, that takes away half my songs. Yeah. Don't let them see my notebook.
Surprisingly, no one's pulled out like a manifesto and read some like really, you know, really aggressive stuff. But, you know, It's early still.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. How do you typically like curate a show? Like someone reaches out and they're like, hey, I want to play, you know, and then you're sort of piecing that together, or do you get things sort of like buttoned up already sent to you?
So I guess a little bit of both. I'll say up until the beginning of this year, we weren't like a legitimate collection of people. It was really just like me and two of my friends, Dylan and Gage, and we kind of just started doing some shows together. I wanted to book some things and they wanted to help out, and they were like, hey, we should do this like collective thing and kind of work together and build what we have based on the connections we have.
Sure.
You know, Dylan was in some touring bands over the years, Crafter being one of them. I don't know if you know Crafter. They were like a hardcore band on Patient Zero Records for a while. Pretty really, really cool band. And Gage too has been in a bunch of stuff over the years. That's you know, so we had some connections, and we were like, let's just gather it all together, and we'll do that. So we didn't really have, you know, Silver Lake until just about January of this year. So we were kind of just like throwing stuff together for the first couple of shows. The first Halloween show that we had last year was not under the Silver Lake moniker, but from there, you know, this year going forward, we've kind of gathered together. You know, Peyton has joined and has just now become, you know, essentially like one of the biggest like working factors of this thing. Like, it really doesn't work without Peyton. He does all the sound for us. He's like always making sure everything's good. So we're glad to have him. But, you know, I think now that we have a little bit
this
of
Peyton.
Yeah, that's surprising. Sure? This Peyton, yeah, he's like, dude, an adult. It's crazy.
I saw him napping at the Halloween show.
Yeah, but the sound was on.
Yeah, the sound was phenomenal.
Yeah, PA was on.
Okay, he's always napping. But you know, we have, so between the four of us, we have a couple of younger guys that we've kind of added to the we're calling them the street crew. So they've been like helping out, and it's really great to have some of these younger guys who know some of the newer bands who are a little younger. You know, Peyton and Dylan and Gage and I are all getting to be kind of those old heads, and we're like the grumpy old dudes who don't really know what's new and coming in. So they've been really great about putting shows together, and the ones that they put together are always really well attended. The kids love it. So, you know, we're stoked on that. But I think long way of answering your question, I'm sorry. It's a little bit of both. Sometimes we have, you know, a touring band that's coming through and they have somebody else attached to them, you know, one band, and then we'll find two locals or one local, one kind of around, or, you know, someone will reach out and we'll just try to book a show around that one band that we, you know, that we like. And we have like some good relationships with some of the like booking spots in like the Albany, Troy area. Sure. Crisis Isolation, they're really great, and you know, we know some people over at like No Fun, you know, good venues and good people that have been doing a lot of great work, and so we try to like work with them, and if there's stuff that we can take, that's some spillover and things like that, you know, we'll try to just do what we can. And right now, you know, we're only doing like a couple shows a month, just because there was a period of time, there was like good Pittsfield, right, there was like all the like good hardcore, all of the stuff we grew up with and you guys grew up with before me. And then there was not a lot. And then there was like this weird period of time where there was like oversaturation and there was too much stuff happening at places that were just, people weren't going to shows, but it was like things were going on for like a minute, and then it died, or it seemed to have died. And then, so the goal for Silver Lake has been to like ease back into it and try not to oversaturate. But yeah, we do a little bit of booking based off of touring bands, or, you know, hey, these guys reached out, let's put a lineup together.
Nice. And if you want additional members of the street crew, Bill could put a flyer up on every post along Dalton the way. Dalton Ave, just like every phone pole, like throw a flyer up there.
Hell yeah.
No problem. He's got you.
And no telephone pole wasted. Like if no. They're all, you reading that flyer the whole way down Elm Street.
Throw on the first pole.
Do you have like a good like wheat paste recipe that you use to like stick it on so they don't do
it? It's an old family recipe, you know. Oh,
okay. It's called a regular stapler, not even a good wood stapler. You're just like, bam!
There I'm a finger.
It's going to look exactly like the PHS to mobile gas station route of the year 1999.
Yeah, that is also very true.
It's like, yo, Andy, hold this up. All right. Don't hit my fingers.
Ah. I'm pretty sure there's a recipe like on Bum Fights DVD Volume 1 you could probably get. We could look that up. I think they have a copy of it at Bomb Shack actually on DVD, but it's like $45 and I haven't committed to it yet, but
do it.
Could have got it on Black Friday.
I missed out. Bummer.
I'm bummed though that Staples is closing and they're not doing they don't have any like print to order. So like I have a small printer at home, but I don't want to waste it. I do actually physically flyer. Some of us have been going out and physically flyering.
Yeah.
I wish we still had like the Berkshire Mall that I could go and do like small flyers to everybody. Yeah. But yes. I go to like friends' businesses and things, and I'll stick a flyer in their door or whatever. But that was the best because I could like go online and do a print order and then just go pick it up after work. Mm. And it was like $6 for, you know, enough Staples flyers awesome. To, yeah.
Right on.
I was going to say, if I know anything about young punk kids, go flyer at Taco Bell, right? That's we never spent a night without going there.
That is very true.
We were fixing. Do
I just sit in the lobby, and wait for people to come in? And then
anyone who orders like a number 10, you're like, okay.
Yeah. You stick it right on the light post. Everyone's seeing it. They're like, oh man.
Just listen in. If they're like, do you want crunchy or soft? And they say soft, you're like, not my scene. Crunchy taco, hardcore kid for sure.
So let me ask you a question. So the name is Silver Lake Booking. So we know obviously it's, you know, around here, Silver Lake. Now, do you dump PCBs in the lake as well? Kind of like to go old school, like General Electric?
Yeah. So actually funny you should mention that.
There's no allegedly there.
No, we don't. But off pod, we do. No,
that's how I got involved.
You said Peyton was a workhorse, and I'm like, this kid is dumping barrels in there. I guess good for him.
Andy, for the ninth time, it's Peyton, not Peyton.
I said Peyton.
Can you correct him for us?
I don't. It's I've.
Peyton every time.
My Andy's history is interesting. You. He can call me whatever he wants.
Thank you. I feel like I'm saying it right. It's like Nabil all over again saying I'm saying his name wrong. Last name. I'm not going to say it this time, though.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Proud of you, Andy.
You couldn't say it if we wanted you.
I'm curious if you even can, though.
I'm going to say it, and then I'm going to call him and see if I said it right.
I'll just call him Pay so I don't mess it up.
See, thank you.
There you go.
There you go.
I like that.
Now, we usually do this when we're talking about band practice. And obviously, you both are in bands, have been in bands. So we'll ask this more about you guys as sort of like booking agents. But do you have any pre-show rituals? Is there something that you like always hit up the same food place? Same, like, is there anything that you guys do ahead of a show?
Two drinks.
Nice.
I definitely have stage anxiety and I hate being a drummer, but I love being a drummer. So no, I got to have a mild buzz.
Okay.
I'll second that. Yeah. Maybe a little bit. No, I think for the booking shows pre-show ritual, it's usually a hot Harry's burrito.
If I can
get a hot Harry's burrito in before the show, then it's a good day. Yeah.
What's your go-to?
Ooh. Lately it's been a spicy buffalo chicken burrito.
Fuck yeah.
I get it as is, add corn and cilantro, because cilantro is the move. If you like it, if you don't have like the gin, you know, the soap gene.
Yeah.
It's banging. Yeah.
Cilantro is where it's at.
I'll get anything, but I just got to get the salsa vinaigrette. That's my jam.
I'm a cowboy caviar guy.
Oh, got
it. Super burrito, half rice.
Peyton, didn't you used to work at Hot Harry's in Lee?
Oh yeah, yep, I did.
Yeah, when I lived on Main Street in Leah's, it popped down.
Yep. My buddy Greg, his uncle like ran it. So he hooked me up with a job, and me and Greg basically fucked off all day.
Oh, Greg, I remember Greg. And then didn't hit the uncle own Juice and Java across the street too? They own like both businesses.
I think it was by the time that I was working with at High Harry's, I think they were winding down having both businesses. But yeah, I think he had the Juice and Java for a minute there. We used to do like a chip challenge and try to like out top each other. And it's like, oh, you got 4 layers on your chip? I got 7. And he's like, oh, I got like 14. And then it was like, there's 5 customers. Stop this.
That's why it was so slow there. Jesus Christ.
I mean, we never complained. Never.
I totally forgot about the
We used to frequent
Harry's.
That all the time.
Little High Harry's, little broom tree. Ooh.
Broom tree.
God, broom tree. All right, let's get back on topic here because there's an important question I have for Peyton. I've been wondering this for a long time.
Said it right.
I always say it right. That's the problem. I'm not going to say your old band name properly. How did you guys come up with that? I just have to know.
I'm pretty sure it was watching SNL.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. There's a skit where Will Ferrell is doing in the actor's studio. I forget who he's talking to, but he says that there's no other way to describe your performance other than making up a word. And it was scrumtralescent. And me and Alex were just like sitting there watching TV, trying to figure out what to do with our band. And we were just like, that's stupid. Let's go.
Hell yeah.
I'm always interested in how people come up with band names. It's like one of the biggest things. Like I'm listening to a band and I'm just like, my brain goes, how the hell did you come up with that name? Like any of them. Cause you're just like, where did you guys decide that you're like, oh, this is what we're going to call ourselves.
The best band names never come from like a brainstorm session. It's always like something impulsively that you're like, that's it. Anyone who's ever sat down and been like, what about the Black Dragons? Like that never holds up, right? It's always like something you hear and you're like, that's the band name, right? Like that.
I was just going to tell you guys about my new band, the Black Dragons. I'm out.
We're getting really meta because this is a topic that we talked about with Ryan last week and this episode hasn't even dropped yet. So you'll hear more about the Black Dragons. No. Yeah, no, I'm with you, Andy. Sometimes it's like, you think a name is really stupid until you hear the background and you're like, okay, if everyone knew the background of it, it wouldn't be such a bad name. Or even like a band that you just completely misunderstand the name, like Smashing Pumpkins. Like, well, no, smashing as in like the British smashing, a smashing good time, not actually Smashing Pumpkins, right?
Too meta.
I mean, you can smash pumpkins.
Well,
yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Peyton. Cause I, since I've met you and heard your band, I'm like, the other day I was with a client and their daughter was moonwalking and it always reminds me of your bassist. We used to just play bass and moonwalk. And I said that to her. I said, you should learn bass. And she's like, what? And do both? She's like, you can. I'm like, I know somebody who did that in a band. I'm like, I'm telling you.
It was a pretty baller move. Yeah, I agree.
That's true.
All right. So I got one other quick question about like current stuff. And then I want to like go into the deep depths. That sound good? We ask everybody this, but we need more insight here so that we know. What is the best pizza in Pittsfield?
Papa Joe's.
Nice.
Ooh, nice.
You weren't answering that as a trivia question, right? You're actually agreeing with Papa Joe's.
Are you like a Papa Joe's? Is it like the deep dish one, or is it just all? Is it all of it? Is it not?
Yes.
Does it not matter?
Yes.
Yes. The answer is yes. Oh, okay. It's Eastside Cafe, though, is the correct answer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Sorry.
Little fuss going on here. All right.
I'm not mad. I've gone to a really notable pizza place, K's. It's in New York. It's on like a weird like a causeway, and then all of a sudden there's a pizza place, and it's like known for being great. And the owner came over when we were eating pizza and he was like, where are you guys from? I've never seen you before. And we're like, oh, we're from Pittsfield. He's like, oh, you guys have Eastside. And I was just like, Yeah. That's why we came here.
Shots fired.
Oh man.
Can I give like a close second? I live closer to it, but Tyler Street Pizza House is
nice. Tyler Street's good.
Solid. It's the bomb. Solid.
We
square slices out of circle.
Yes. The mini triangles.
I would say it's tough because we do talk a lot about like Eastside and Papa Joe's, and they're just not even the same pizza. Like they're two totally different things. So it's really hard to be like, what do you like more? Like a sunset or, you know, I mean, it's like they're not really comparable pizzas. But if you just want good quality pizza, you can
I just like talking shit because I know it's a heated debate around here. Eastside is good pizza, though.
I got in this debate with my sister the other night. Called her a bitch.
Speaking of,
can I tell Eastside? I'm like, bitch. What the fuck you want to get?
Can I tell a quick pizza story? That's absolutely like the most like unhinged thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
So I went to Tyler Street Pizza House fairly recently, picking up a pizza for the fam, and the guy in front of me, like full business suit, just regular looking dude, getting out of work, grabbing a pizza. Picks up like a large pizza from the lady. And he goes, all right, have a good day. And he puts it under his arm like a briefcase and walked out.
No.
What?
And I was like, no, it didn't happen. And I like looked out the window and he was like just walking down the street with his suitcase.
Holy shit.
I couldn't believe it.
Did the lady be like, what the fuck?
So I went back in like recently after that and I asked and she was like, oh yeah, he does that. I was like, that's the reg?
He likes it tossed.
Apparently. He likes it hand tossed.
Can you imagine if someone bought him a pizza? Yeah. And he's like, oh my God, this is what it's supposed to look like? You're like, yes.
If he's the guy who picks up a pizza for like the work office party.
No.
Imagine if he was an Uber driver.
Uber Eats.
I think about that. Anytime I pick up a pizza, I'm like, I'm going to put it under my arm. I'm going to tuck it under my arm. I'm going to do it.
I think you should.
Reason for someone to ask that question.
Yeah,
is that normal? Crazy. Have you seen that before? Like what?
You know what would be great? Like if you ever go for like a walk or a jog, is just take two empty boxes and put them under each arm and just like walk around town for people who are like, what the fuck? It's Pizza Guy. Like, that could be a good thing.
We lost $2 Nate, so now we need a new guy.
We'll think of a good name. It's like thinking of a band name, what your nickname can be. Pizza Box Bill. Oh, Bill, there you go.
Pizza Box Bill.
Hell yeah.
I like it. Are we ready to go? Andy, can you give us the lyrical version of Back to the Future?
Oh, wait, I was just listening to this song today, too.
Bill, like,
gotta get back in time.
There we go.
There it is.
All right, just want to make sure we had that on there.
Oh, yeah. Gotta get back in time. All right, we're not on focus, Bill. We gotta get in time.
That was a harmony, I think.
Yeah,
it was like a minor second,
minor threat,
something. All right, so we're gonna go back. So I'll start with you, Devin. Like, what was your entry point into the scene? Did you have like a Pied Piper that brought you to the dark side?
Yeah, I did. So I grew up in Pittsfield, moved around a little bit when I was younger, like outside of Pittsfield, and then came back, I think right before like fourth grade. So I was about eight or nine, I think. And I lived right next door to four brothers that you may know. The two older ones,
hell yeah,
Pat and Sean were very much in the punk scene, and I grew up with the two younger brothers. They were closer to my age. One was a year younger than me, one was a year older than me, and I think they played me Energy by Op Ivy, and it just my whole life just exploded. I think before that it was like Limp Bizkit, which is like every kid my age was like, I had to have a backwards New York Yankees hat and like black and white Adidas. It blew my mind. And I listened to that record with them. And it was almost like that moment from, I don't know if you've ever seen SLC Punk when they like do the flashback to when he's a kid and he's like, what is this music? And he's like, yeah, it's called punk. It was like that. I had this like really cool. Yeah. It felt like a real movie moment. And, yeah. And then I like threw away every Limp Bizkit CD I had. And I just went out to, I don't know if it was strawberries at the time. Maybe I can't remember if it was strawberries or
coconuts.
What was it? Coconuts.
You're probably still in strawberries territory until like 01.
Yeah. It was 99. So maybe it was that strawberries still. And I had my mom for my birthday, my mom had made her buy me Op Ivy, Energy and like a couple of other CDs I can't remember at the time.
That's so rad.
Yeah, and that was it. And we would go into their basement and I was learning how to play guitar at the time. And we would just like slam on, I'm assuming either Sean or Pat had a drum set in the basement, and we would tape. They had like a karaoke machine that had like a tape deck in it, and you could record onto tape with the karaoke machine. And
we would
just do these like screaming, you know, just didn't have any chords. There was nothing. It was just nonsense. But yeah, that was kind of my start. Yeah.
Is Op Ivy kind of like the Beatles for a young punker? Do you think?
Yeah.
It's got to be, right?
Sure, my origin story involves an Op Ivy shirt.
Op Ivy's definitely my origin story too.
It's a gateway drug into punk.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it was a gateway drug for sure. And, I think from there I didn't really fall too much more down the like ska path, but, it ended up being, you know, more like early mid 80s, like American hardcore, Minor Threat, Black Flag, all that stuff. So I think from there, but I was really fortunate, because, you know, they would take the three of us, the three younger kids, to some of the shows. So, you know, I was able to, you know, in 2000 and 2001, go to the girls club shows and things like that. And it's, you know, they would just drive us there, or like my mom would drive me there and drop me off. And, you know, so I was fortunate to have like some early experiences with that. And then, yeah, just took off from there.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Peyton, what about you? What, other than the Op Ivy shirt?
Well, playing music in general started for me, I think, in 01. There was a talent show. I went to Lennox, and there was a talent show at Lennox, and me and my friends were like, start a band. And I was like the last one to get in on the conversation, so I got fucked into drumming.
That's the way it works.
Well, which is awesome, because like one kid owned a drum set, but he was like, "Nah, I'm playing guitar."
Whoa!
So that was actually the beginning of Scrum.
She's on the pizza, controlling your mind. No topping the pain is what you will find.
We had, at the time for the talent show, there was another kid, Nick, sang. We did an Ozzy cover, or Black Sabbath, actually. And it was terrible. But that was, the beginning of Scrum. But a couple years later, probably like maybe the next year, the year after, it was probably the next year, one of the teachers at the school retired and there was a new music teacher. So I was like, all right, well, I'm a drummer now. I guess I'll join band. And that's where I met Derek from 315. And I'm pretty sure one day I was there wearing an Op Ivy shirt and he kind of scene checked me and was like, hey, you like punk music? And I said some right things and he invited me to go see Skip George.
Don't you see all the jealousy in all my friends around? They look just
pretty sure my first show was at the Siberian Cafe. That was how I kind of entered things.
Guarantee I was at that show, and I remember.
I'm sure. I think it was Minimal Effort, Skip George, like Incline.
Probably,
maybe. I don't know. I don't have a great memory.
It was pre my time for Minimal Effort, I think. But I remember when Skip George played. I had never been that close to them when they played, and I remember there's like the front of the window where they played was like carpeted, but everything else was like wood floors. And I remember they kept emptying out their little spit valves and it was like spraying all over. And I was like gagging with like, that's going to be in that carpet forever.
Oh no.
So bad. But that's ska, man. It's just.
Yeah. It's living that ska life, you know?
Wow. Quite an entry. Do you remember the questions he asked you?
No, it was just,
he probably said, back in school, you ever get busted?
It wasn't anything like name three songs. It was just like, what else do you listen to? And I think I said Strike Anywhere and he was like, all right, you're all right.
Don't let him fool you. He knows those questions and he asks every kid at a show. It's like the entry for on the way in when they all pay at the door.
What do you think about Limp Bizkit?
I thought it was funny, Devin, when you said I threw out all my Limp Bizkit albums, and all I thought was, wasn't there only one?
No.
To be fair,
there's like seven by now.
What?
Yeah. So I had.
Dude, they're still their Bizkit is still Limp.
I think they just play Break Stuff when they play, though, don't they?
Yeah. Well, that's the best song.
Yeah, it's the only thing worth going for.
They started and closed a show with it last year or the year before or something like that.
They had the record that had Nookie on it, which I can't remember the name.
So
there
was $3 bills, y'all. I think that was the first one.
That was that.
That was one of the first records I ever bought.
And then Significant Other? Significant Other. That was the one.
That was the mid one, like maybe 2000.
Yeah, and then Chocolate Starfish was a little bit after that, which was also
buying Limp Bizkit's $3 bill, y'all, was a core memory for me because I made the conscious decision to buy tapes because I could get two tapes for one CD.
Hell yes. Yeah.
So I got that and what was it? Bone Thugs and Harmony, East 99.
Damn.
I remember looking at singles, buying Metallica's Until It Sleeps, thinking I was getting a huge deal on an album because it was $2.99. And then I get home to play it and I'm like, it's only one song. And then I think someone was like, dude, it's called a single.
Those were still kind of a deal, probably.
It was. I mean, it's a great song. But
isn't that a Frank Turner song? Lars Fuck the Kids?
Oh, you son of a bitch.
That's why you can't have Bill running your shows, though. Because Bill would say, hey, you heard of Frank Turner? And people would be like, I have no idea who that is. And
then
he'd be turning away people. And only people 65 and older would be able to come to the show.
Fair
Frank
enough.
Turner. I went to school with that guy.
Isn't he on the $5 bill?
He's British.
Isn't he on the $5 pound?
Is he $5 pound?
If they're not using American money, then why the fuck? What the fuck are they doing?
Oh, agreed.
Oh my God.
All right, so I want to kind of live back in this space. So if we're talking about, like, let's say that 2000 to like 2005 space, maybe, do you have a favorite band, local band from that time frame? Anyone that sticks out?
Hot take.
We don't know if it's a hot take yet, Andy.
I spent a shit ton of time hanging out with Derek at 315, so probably that. Or
hell yeah.
Sick and Tired again, hanging out with Derek.
Yeah, I think 315 for sure was a big one. Brendan's family was friends with my family, so I saw Brendan and his younger brother a lot. So that was kind of another entry for me too. Was through that with 315. Citizen as you drive by, sweet one.
Yeah,
nice.
Who else? So many. All of them.
All of them.
The fact that older kids were like doing this like insane thing that I wanted to do so badly, I didn't really care who it was or what it was. I just wanted to listen to it. So yeah, it was that. And then, you know, I think Rasputin too, because they were a little closer to my age.
Right on.
So that was like dang, I could do this. Yeah.
I think I have that tape still.
It's on JHP, I think. I think it's on that Bandcamp.
It is. Cool.
I think. Yeah.
But I definitely have the, I'll dig it up at some point during the podcast. I have the OG tape. I don't have the cover. I just have the loose tape. I didn't keep very good care of it, unfortunately.
I think I had a dartboard tape too.
Nice. Wow. So you had all iterations.
Yeah. I know.
It was all like dartboard sweatshirt, didn't you? And it got like confiscated at school, right?
Oh, the dartboard hoodie?
Yeah, the dartboard hoodie.
Yeah, just since you mentioned it, Devin, I think this was kind of a cool piece too, was like, so my recollection was like, I always thought if you liked music, you were like so distanced from it, right? You wanted to play in a band, your band was going to be shit, and there was going to be these like Bon Jovis out there. And so like going to shows locally, these punk shows, like these dudes would play and then they would just like come out into the crowd and like hang out. And you're like, oh, these are like cool dudes and they're older than me and they know a lot about music and they just did something really cool that I like admire so much. And then they came and like talked to you. And so I think I made friends with Joe pretty early on. I think I was probably like 4 years his junior, but he was still like, hey, let me show you some cool things that you should listen to. Gave me a bunch of CDs.
That doesn't sound like Joe at all.
I know, right? Gave me a bunch of CDs and stuff, but he did give me a dartboard hoodie that I wore to school and I got suspended for wearing it. And then I wore it again and I got suspended again. But you know what?
3 days off.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think to your point, Eric, I think that like we all needed that. Like you need somebody, you need the old head who's like, yeah, just be quiet and stand over here. But also you could do this if you want. And it's great. You know, I thought it was awesome. I think I showed you the picture. I found a Youth Fest flyer. And that yep. was another like that was right in that same era. It was like Dead Rats for sure was on that on that bill. Yeah. And
we got banned that year. We got banned the year before.
Yeah.
Cause we played one as Bulletproof and Bill dropped the microphone. Andy was shaking his junk in some boxers in the middle of Common Park. And we got banned from playing. So we decided to change our name from Bulletproof to Dead Rats. And then we got to play Youth Fest the next year.
Youth Fest was such a fun thing because it was like a really low barrier to entry point for like people who weren't necessarily part of things because you could just like sort of be like really far away, an inch closer. And
it was also...
It was the skateboarding too, which was sick. Ooh, you know, yeah. It was at the Common. You had like, I think... One of them had like a skate comp too. Did somebody do like a skate comp? Did they put that together? And there was like bands and maybe it wasn't the same time. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I think later on they did. They had bands actually set up down at the skate park.
Yeah.
But the weird thing was like they kept moving the stage. So I think the year, probably the flyer that you have, which I think was probably 02, they had the stage 02. Actually facing the basketball court at the time. But before it had always faced like into the main field.
It was down the back of the church, right? Or was that the other way?
No. It was like, so they had that weird like little bathroom area or whatever. It was like next to that, but facing towards the playground and the basketball court. But before they had it in that same spot, but facing out like from the street out into the rest of the park. But it wasn't like ever that well attended. They needed to have all that space. So I think it was sort of like a way to maybe make it feel a little bit more intimate.
Yeah.
And so it was focused and it was like people could be skateboarding or something and hear the music from afar. I don't know that was great to skateboard to that we played, but you know, we were no Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 soundtrack or anything.
It was Top Skater at that point, wasn't it? Was that
which one? Oh, Top Skater was legit. That's how I found Less Than Jake from Top Skater.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, they had two tracks on there. It was a PlayStation game before Tony Hawk, and they had a bunch of like 2 minute songs because the runs like were only 2 minutes, and it had two Less Than Jake songs. It had other bands on there that I like caught on to.
H2O. I was playing that earlier today.
Yeah.
I was literally going through my video games, making sure, seeing which ones worked because we're like putting in a little like retro video game station in our bar downstairs.
Radical.
And so I was going through my PlayStation games today. I played that for like 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I love that game.
This isn't what I feel house
for. For the music. Same thing with Tony Hawk, which I really appreciated. Just like hearing some bands that I was like, oh, this is like listening to a punk-a-rama, but like a little bit more curated in a way that I appreciated.
Video games and like skate videos are like some of the biggest influences on my musical taste, like definitely like the Tony Hawk Pro Skaters and like my buddy Tiger, his name was actually Tiger. He was wicked into skateboarding when we were like in middle school and elementary school. And he had like zero Misled Youth. And I remember like that blew my mind because I heard like Slayer and Misfits. And I was like, what is this shit?
Yeah. I think I had an early memory because I would go to the skate park quite a bit. I would skate from my house on Holmes Road up there like daily and skate all day with my friend Mike. And at one point, I think actually Sean that you're mentioning, Devin, came down to skateboard one time. It was like boombox blasting Dead Kennedys. And yes. I was like, oh, like
that tracks.
I was like, yeah. I think I've heard this band before, like in, you know, a few songs or something. And I think at the time they had one song on Tony Hawk. And I was like, oh yeah, cool. I know this band. Like I've heard these guys. I've heard these guys. And I also scored like 40,000 points on that run. No big deal. Yeah. It was, School.
there was an early Birdhouse video and I can't remember what like pro skater it was, but I think that they did their whole skate video to Bad Brains Eye Against Eye. And it was and I was like, oh shit, what is this? And like, that was like, I think my intro into Bad Brains. And I was like, oh my God, this band is so good. And every time I skateboarded, it was like throw on Eye Against Eye on the iPod first.
That's
gen.
What's up.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's funny how those things, it's almost like we all kind of lived a tertiary, like, or like a, just this weird parallel universe of like getting into skateboarding followed by Limp Bizkit and then Op Ivy. I'm attributing Limp Bizkit to you, Peyton. I don't care what you say. I know. Dude, you had
not mad at all.
Oh yeah, you had. You said it was your first album. Yeah, you're good. You're good.
It was one of them. It was just a core memory. I remember buying that one.
I think if I didn't curate like playlists for our shows and made him play that in between bands, it would just be Limp Bizkit. And like it'd be the punk rock show volume 2 soundtrack. Dude, we were talking about that recently. Do you ever seen those? Remember those DVDs, the punk rock show DVDs?
Was it
was like RAWK rock. They had them at like FYE.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
First time I saw the like AFI's He Who Laughs Last video.
Yo. Am I thinking of the same one? It's like Cinema Beer Nuts. Was that a different? It was kind of a similar concept. I know different labels would put them out. And so sometimes you would get like Vagrant had
like
one.
The Vagrant record.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Comp.
Drive Through started doing them. And then, it went off. But those are cool videos.
You have to, I think I have, I think I like recently watched it. Eric, I'll send you the link to the YouTube. Somebody like uploaded the VHS tapes of that. And it's like, it's so good. It's like Slick Shoes. Remember that band? Slick Shoes.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
And it was like the making of AFI videos. It was awesome. It was so sick.
Yeah. That little like into the behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like doing all the special effects for the He Who Laughs Last video when he gets like shot and stabbed and like all the stuff in the back of the trunk.
That's awesome.
So good.
All the like behind the scenes for that. Yeah, it was cool.
So other than Hot Plate, obviously, because that's like in current state, but again, if we're talking like that time frame, do you have a venue that you really like to go to, like a legacy venue?
Yeah. For me, prior to like being, I don't know, 15 or so, it was like go to a show when I could get to a show. You know, I didn't just leave and I was like, fuck you, mom, I'm walking to the show.
Yeah.
I did that at 15, but before 15, it was a little bit harder. So like, I do remember some of the like BCC shows that were like outside of the cafeteria.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
I think Brendan was setting those up maybe, but those were really cool. And then I think most of my time period was Source of the Nile. That was
nice.
Everything I went to was there. And then Rebel Sound Records after that. So pretty much until the scene died, it was those two.
Right on.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time at Rebel Sound Records helping Andy do the shows and the Doors and stuff like that. So probably there.
Yeah. But both really cool venues. And Ryan, that you'll hear, talks a lot about Source of the Nile and how that venue kind of came to fruition. So that was a good sort of like puzzle fill in that we were like, how did this venue like survive or like even get thought of?
Yeah, come about. Yeah.
Because it was kind of out of the blue. It's just like one day they're like, hey, we're having a show at Source of the Nile. And you're like, A thrift store?
Yeah, that Halloween show, I think, was the first show.
Yeah, like, there's room in there for this?
Yeah. But Rebel Sound later on was like such a cool venue. I agree. Like, I think
Andy did such a good job.
Yeah, Andy being sort of like this old head, as you would say, like just coming back. And I really appreciated that he, you'd have a lot of contact with him ahead of shows, which I liked. Like, you know, I think he's like, oh, send me your stuff. I want to hear it. I want to like see how it's going to fit in, like, or like where I can, you know, put you guys on and that kind of thing. And I always thought that was really cool of him, because before that, it was like you just kind of got thrown on a show because you knew somebody. And I didn't know Andy very well, but I was in a new band that didn't have any traction yet. And it was like, oh, how do you get shows? And without trying to like name drop, it's like, okay, we just want to play a show. Do you want us or not? And Andy was really cool at getting us in there. And then I think also, I feel like I recall him, he had a radio show at the time too, yeah, right?
I think so.
And I think he was like willing to play stuff on there too, which was cool.
And he had this like really insane reach. Like some of the bands that played at Rebel Sound were insane.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, the only like major band that I think Source of the Nile had some, but I don't think they had as many as the Rebel Sound like legacy did over time. I think I saw like Fucked Up at Source.
Yep.
I think they played. Actually, I was just, I don't know if you can see that's the new Fucked Up record. I was just listening to it before.
Oh, cool. Oh,
nice.
I love that band.
Yeah, they played at Source. That was a really cool show. I think actually, Bill, we played that show. I'm pretty sure we played it for Hope for the Worst.
Yep.
And then I think we did like a walk on with Sick and Tired. I think we played like
that's yeah.
I vaguely remember that was the show. And Jared, you probably remember this, where all of a sudden, like we started playing and everything got really close to us. And like within the first song, somebody hit into Dan's cymbal and it just like came back and hit him in the head. And then Mike got like knocked over and was like sitting down, like playing guitar because he like hurt his knee or something. That show was.
That's wild.
But like that small of a venue, you're going to have some of those.
Was that the last one?
No.
That was like 06, right? There was a few more
right
after
around that time.
Yeah.
I think that like around that same time, and nobody talks about this show, and I'm selfishly going to plug it because I played it. Do you guys remember the Agent Orange show at ITAM?
Did you go to that? I missed that. I was so pissed because I wasn't Speaking supposed to work. And they somebody like called out and they brought me in, and I was like, as long as I get out to see the show, and I was not able to make it.
I missed it. I didn't get to go to any of the shows at ITAM. I played one with the Dolly Rots, but outside of that, I didn't. I wanted to go see more shows. It was actually a cool venue.
Yeah,
I think that's cool the venue. Only one I went to was that Dolly Rots one.
Mm. I think they only had like maybe a couple. I think 315 played there. Did like a, I don't know if it was like technically a reunion show.
Was that the one with Off With Their Heads?
Yeah.
Wait, was that the American Legion?
No, that was ITAM.
That was ITAM, yeah.
I'm almost.
Is the ITAM the one by the lake?
Yeah.
Right? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe the actual 315 reunion was at American Legion, though.
Yeah, because I was in a band, Zombie Assault, that played that one.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's right.
No, they had played ITAM, but I don't know if it might have been like they probably did multiple reunions. I think they took long breaks from playing, but yeah.
I was privy to at least three 315 reunions.
Okay, there you go.
Right, I thought every show was right, a reunion show.
Yeah, okay, so I wasn't far off. Yeah.
No, not at all.
Ask that long-winded question. I'm going to run to the bathroom quick.
Hey, stop it. I'll just talk because
how was the Agent Orange show? Like,
oh my God, it was so sick. Yeah. Dude, I was speaking of Tony Hawk Pro Skater, I was like, you know, they had Bloodstains. That was like the big hit, and that was on, I don't know, was that on Pro Skater 1? I think so.
I think so, yeah.
And I was like, this is insane. It was Bloodstains on 2?
I think it was 2.
My memory's a little foggy.
Yeah, I can't remember either. I also can't remember the last time I played Tony Hawk Pro Skater, any of those games, but I became a skate guy. That was insane. And then I had a punk band at the time. I was probably 16. Mm-hmm.
at a punk band called Shock Treatment. That Andy would book us on shows in a while, and we would do stuff like that. We were just like a, you know, 3-chord hardcore band. Yeah. We covered like, you know, some Minor Threat songs and things like that, whatever. But he like let us open that show, and it was awesome. And I have like our set list, and like Agent Orange signed it for us, and they were just really nice dudes. But I missed almost all of Agent Orange set because a friend of ours got into a fight with this like older drunk dude, and it got taken outside, and so we were like trying to back the homie, and we like missed most of Agent Orange, which was horrible. I mean, I ran inside for Bloodstains. I heard that. I was like, I gotta go. I can't protect you anymore.
Yeah.
But weird side note. So this dude got like blackout drunk at the show. My buddy was like in the circle pit and like accidentally like hit him, or not, didn't even hit him. Like the dude just like put his hand out and was like crowd killing people from outside of the pit. Like it was totally backwards. The dude was just being a dick.
Yeah.
And so this dude was like maybe in his late 20s, and my 16-year-old friend like just turned back and cocked back and just punched his front teeth out.
Whoa.
Like immediately. He was just like, bam. come to find out years later, the drummer for my band at the time ran into that guy and said, yeah, that was the last time he had ever drank. He got punched sober and had been sober for like 10 years because he was like so embarrassed from that show.
Right on.
Like, which of the 12 steps is that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, the third step is get your lights knocked out.
Ian MacKay is so happy right now. He's like, yeah, that's how you do it.
That's right.
Wow. That I guess that's a wake up call. You like come home one night and you're like, I missed half of Agent Orange. I lost all my teeth.
Right, from a 16-year-old.
Yeah, I was gonna
say a little kid. Yeah.
Boy, oh boy,
that was awesome.
So Peyton, I have a couple memories of your band probably in like 2007 coming to my house in Lee to record like a little EP that I don't think you ever like put out or anything. But I want to say I had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, that was a good time. I remember always just choking and having stage fright and not knowing how to play my own songs. Also, you did a great job somehow making my kick and snare sound the same. So it seems like I could blast beat the whole entire time, which was not the case at all. I had bands asking me to join that I was like, I can't fucking play drums like that. I don't know where you got that impression.
I actually remember there was a part where I'm trying to think what song it was. There was a part where you wanted a double bass part, but like, I don't think we were there like to get a double bass part.
So I was never there for double bass, but yeah,
I remember how I did it
with like a fucking keyboard.
No. What I did was I just had a microphone like I have in front of me now, and I just tapped it with my two fingers, all the double bass hits, and I just triggered it to a kick drum.
It worked. The one actual time I played double bass, you ended up triggering it.
So I'll drop that somewhere in here so everyone can hear the finger work that I did on. Can I put that? Can I be a band credit on that? You should have listened to me.
You recorded it. I mean, you were already a band.
Finger bass.
Credit on it.
All right. Nice. Cool. Yeah. I got to play a double finger in Scrumptious Lesson. It was amazing.
That was the recording too, where we sped up a guitar solo.
Yep.
So it sounded like Nick could shred like 10 times harder than he actually could, but it just ended up being like video game noise.
Yeah, it was like the very high pitch
of Dragon Force. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Dragon Force.
What we did was we put it on halftime for record, so we just played it at halftime, and I just corrected it to full time, and it was like, blah, blah, blah. It was like insane. Yeah. You know, tricks of the studio. Isn't that how every
that
metal
you still
band records?
Use on this podcast today.
I'm going to drop a guitar solo in right now. Okay, not really, but. Might
there's
as well.
Just there's going to be like a little kick drum underneath anytime Payton talks. There's just like a little.
I'm gonna trigger Payton's voice to a kick drum.
So that'd be funny.
We're not gonna hear any stories. It's just gonna be all thumps. So Devin, I think only got to see the AFI version of Sinking at the Halloween show, but I did buy the
awesome.
Split. I got the split with Arms
thanks.
Like Roses. And I didn't listen to it yet because I don't have a CD player where I like listen to music most commonly. But I also found the catalog on Spotify and I went through it. There's some really cool shit on there. I was very vibey. It was a great drive for me. I like the sort of like slow but meaningful, like yearning aesthetic of that. And it was a cool listen. And I don't know that from my experience that there's ever been a band playing that kind of music in Pittsfield. So maybe you know of one, but I thought it was really cool and unique.
Thanks. I appreciate it. No, I'm not really sure either. Like, I think like the quote unquote, like emo bands maybe that played in Pittsfield were a little bit different, you know, maybe like
pop
early
punk.
Two. Yeah. Pop punk.
Pop
and like
punk,
early
they called
2000s
it, they called
emo.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like the ending kind of like was a little bit there, you know, like, kind of
they
like,
were doing like an know. AFI Sing the Sorrow
were,
kind of
yeah,
vibe.
Yeah, Sing yeah, the yeah. Sorrow era AFI yeah. stuff. You know, we I think that like punk and hardcore and like early like emo alt rock stuff really translates well together. We actually tend to play a lot of hardcore shows, which is an interesting phenomenon, I guess. But we all just really liked like, you know, Mineral and Sunny Day Real Estate and bands like that, and wanted to emulated and do something a little different and play in a weird open tuning. And so that's kind of what we've been doing. And it's been fun. We've been doing that since like 2017, I think.
Right. Very on.
Cool. I'm always nervous to like say a band that I think it kind of sounds like, because I'm like, what if they don't want to go for that at all?
No, so, that's
Sunny Day Real Estate is one that I was like, yeah, okay. Like I'm getting, but I think you guys are like a little bit more aggressive, like a little harder, which I like. And again, that open tuning gives it like a very different like layer and contrast that I think is just like, it's almost like spooky eerie, but like not at the same time. I don't know how to describe it. I remember listening to it and I was like, okay. I think that there's a pretty different vibe between albums, right? Like, I don't know that it's like, because I could tell like when, obviously they sound a little bit different, but it felt like there was kind of like an evolution of the band. It was like, it was putting them all in like a shuffle kind of thing. But I was like, okay, like I got to go back and listen to them like in full album version. But
no, I think that you're right. Like we had, we put out like a couple EPs initially, and that we recorded at Gate 4 Studios with Will. He's like a, kind of a big like hardcore sound engineer.
Sure.
He's put out stuff like Mind Force and he's in like Maniac and Restraining Order and like some bigger like hardcore bands. So it was interesting to get like that engineering take on, you know, like a emo alt rock record.
Sure.
You know, so we did that for like the first couple records we did with him. We did like two EPs, and then our first full length we put out with Patient Zero Records, which is out of Pittsfield, if you know Jerry.
he like just took a chance on us and pressed vinyl for us and did, you know, did cool things, which was pretty rad. So, you know, I have like my own music on vinyl, which was like a dream of mine.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so that was really cool. And then this last split we did just with a friend of ours in his basement, and he's not really like recording, you know, bands or anything. We just did that. And, us and, we actually share the same, Sinking in Arms Like Roses share the same, drummer. So we were able to kind of like just do everything with them. And, yeah, it was pretty cool, but definitely a different sound in the last split.
I will just say real quick, because, and this is no shade to anybody, but like I've been to a handful of shows recently, and like, I'm a drummer by trade, so I like listening to drums. Like, I want to hear the drummer, and your drummer is excellent. Like,
fucking awesome.
And it's funny because like we were the podcast crew was together, but we were also there with our friend Christina, and Christina was like, the drums, man. And like, she was just big into the drums. And like, that's something I always listen for. And like, it's hard hitting and it's consistent and it's on time. And like, it really like was the difference. I think when you hear some bands that are just kind of coming up and they're a little bit on the amateur side, like when you can get a really great drummer in there, I think it really sets the tone for like how good your band is going to be. And just want to, and obviously drumming in Arms Like Roses too is also great, but just,
for sure. Shout out Tom. And I have to shout out our original drummer, Tyson. He, has since moved away, but he was a friend of mine from college. We did. So most of the records were with Tyson this last split was with Tom. I'll let him know. He loves a little praise.
I was getting young Derek D vibes, like just this really like solid.
He's a lot younger than us too. He's like in his mid 20s, and the rest of us are all, you know, mid 30s and getting older,
man.
I would like to point out that me and Devin are in a band together, and he didn't shout me out as being a good drummer. So
I wasn't done yet, Peyton. This is my long-winded answer.
You did, but
I was going to ask about this band. So can I get into it? Let's talk about Memory Box, right? That's the band we're talking about.
Yep, that's right.
I'm not as familiar. I'll be honest with you. Like, I've got some stuff on Dropbox, and I got through a little bit of it.
No, we this was just like a, you know, kind of a bit of a side project for us, kind of between other things. And while we were doing a lot of other stuff, and we tend to be like a fall and winter band, where we only practice during the fall and winter because everybody else is busy and we either
everybody
have
else
kids
is a dad. Or, yeah.
What do you guys, squash?
Yeah, seriously. But that's a little more, what would you call that, Pei? Kind of music.
I don't know. It's such a hard thing to post-hardcore, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess we're post-hardcore.
We're all like, you know, sad boys and angry boys who aren't sad and angry anymore. That's pretty much what post-hardcore is.
Right on.
Or is it a pre-hardcore?
Maybe pre-hardcore.
It's like a little
question.
Little
have
heavier.
You guys ever thought of doing the theme music for some of the local wrestlers that wrestle at the Masonic Temple?
Oh, I love
Temple,
that question, Andy.
Right? I'm just going to put it out there. I feel
but
like
local
they could
wrestlers.
Use, you know, the Masonic wrestlers. Temple or people.
XWA, Extreme Wrestling Alliance.
We have famous wrestlers from Pittsfield. We were cheering them on.
Wrecking Ball. I mean, he needs a better theme song than, you know, that lady who sings I Swing Him Like a Wrecking Ball. What's her name?
Miley Cyrus?
I knew it. It was on the tip of my tongue. I was going to say, you know,
he used
a
to
dad
wrestle at
with
the
a
mall.
Mullet.
Yeah.
There was wrestling at the mall in the old Navy for a minute there.
That's right.
Yeah, they moved
out,
up to the Masonic Temple.
Lance.
I think there were less fights when the wrestling was happening than the old Navy.
Yeah, right.
Give me them cargo pants.
I played a show in that old Navy it was just an empty building. Yeah, I worked at Hot Topic, and we got to do two shows. One of them was in the center court of the mall.
No, which was insane. Outside of JCPenney,
that's pretty.
It was
ridiculous. And then
the big weird things all on the ceiling.
Yeah, that whole like art thing. We played under those, and then in the old Navy empty building.
What kind of discount did you get at Hot Topic?
25%.
20%.
Yeah, Hot Topic. I will tell you, Hot Topic was one of the best jobs I've ever had. So good, they were awesome. If you were in a band that was on tour, they would hold your job for you.
Wow,
you could just come back and tour whenever you wanted. They didn't care. You just had to like request it off ahead of time, and it was like 20% off, and I got a lot of. For a while, they had records, so I got a lot of records.
Right on,
it was great.
So. Nice. When you were doing the set outside of JCPenney, like how is the set? Like, I'm trying to like mentally put the setup in that.
Let me paint the picture for you.
Yeah, so. Thank you.
How did you even go about doing that?
Yeah.
So I was in
JC doesn't have any fucking customers. It's not like they're fucking
no. So it was spot. So it was sponsored by Hot Topic. So it was when I worked
there
for a minute. Hot Topic was doing in-store performances. And what they used to do was just like acoustic sets. A band would do an acoustic set in a Hot Topic and it would be like an in-store thing. And they had like, across the country, they had like, you know, all the bands play, you know, in-store performances. And I was like, hey, can my really dumb power metal band that's six dudes play an in-store performance? And my boss was like, yeah, definitely. So we did that in store. Shout out Warsinium. That was a cool band. And then we were like, hey, let's do a real show in the middle of the mall. And somehow my boss from Hot Topic got approval from the mall administration to let us do a full six-person power metal band hour-long set in the center of of the Bertram Mall.
That's so cool.
And apparently that went off without a hitch and they let us do it again in the old Navy space. So
that's so fucking cool.
I have no idea.
What was the hippie shop that was right there on the corner?
Brighter Days.
Brighter Days. That was it. Yeah.
That place was legit. I was just thinking about that. I walked by a lady and she smelled like Brighter Days. Do you remember how that store smelled?
Yes. Champa, dude. Oh, every stone I had that.
Champa,
yeah.
Hell
yeah.
So, yeah, she did have dreadlocks, but I was like, man, this lady smells like Brighter Days.
Just think of High Fidelity.
Yeah.
That's right.
Patchouli stinking ass out of my store.
AC unit.
Oh. I didn't know you were in Warsinium. I feel like...
Yeah, I sang for that band. And then that turned into a more like post-hardcore band called Stairwell C. We did that for a minute.
Right on.
Yeah. And that was about the time when everything was dying in Pittsfield.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about that because it happened at like kind of different points. But I think like the sort of like group that I was in, a lot of folks started going to college like between like 04 and 06. And that was where things started to get like really fragmented or new bands would kind of like spawn off. And then you just wouldn't have the same. Cause what's funny is we've talked about this a couple of times where we're like, oh, remember that show and this show and that show and this show. And like, they're all in the same week. Sometimes like we play like four shows in a week. And it felt like it was like over the course of 10 years, because I think there was such this, like congestion and saturation, as you mentioned before, of playing like every show that was possible. And like, it wasn't really the way to build an audience, because at a point, like they're getting sick of you playing like five times a week, but that was happening so frequently. And then when a lot of the venues started closing and bands weren't really playing as much, it was like you went to one show a month or like maybe even less than that. And if you wanted to go to a show, it was like, you have to go to Albany and you're going to go to like New Age Cabaret or what was the other one? Valentine's, like
one of those Bogies. Places.
Or you're going up to like Adams, and that was like when I think it was still like
the PNA.
Damaged and stuff were playing around that point. Like otherwise there wasn't a lot. Pittsfield was pretty much dead for a while. And then I think Rebel Sound Records was kind of the revival of that. And that was that like 2009 or later?
No, I think it was like 2009. that makes sense. And he only had the shop for maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
Was it like 9 to 11, maybe around that time? Maybe there was a little more, but you know, I think that once he shut the shop down, I think that was pretty much the end of it for a while.
Well, what about
Chameleons?
Chameleons. Yeah. Yeah.
That. Yeah.
Because I played one show at Chameleons, I think probably it had to be like maybe 2013.
What band was that?
That was the dueling shows too, wasn't there? It was like a near Halloween or something. And there was another, wasn't there like a bunch of people hanging out at like a bar on the other side? And then there was a show on this side.
Yes.
Like there was like a two like big groups of very different people mixing together.
Yeah. They used to do like, they would do like a show in like the dining room area that was like under the like Chameleon sign, you know, mm-hmm. that was where like all the like hardcore shows happened. And then there was like the bar in the middle. And then like on the other side, there'd be like a hip hop show and there would just be
okay.
like
yeah.
DJs.
Yes. Right okay.
And it was always like overlapping. So like the last band was playing and then like some hip hop thing was happening on the other side. And the people that were like, it was like those two oceans that don't mix, you know, but they just like hang out.
It's just all brackish.
It's just that. Yeah. It's that.
Yeah. I was in a band at the time called Just Say So. With
all right. Okay.
Pat, Matt, and Murph. And we played a show there. It had to be like, it was like 2012 or 2013. Can't remember who we played with. Honestly, like, I think we had a situation where, like Matt had to leave early and we like ended up loading up his whole truck and then we had to like go help him unload at his house. And so like, I think we ended up like leaving after we played. I think there was like one or two bands to play after us. Hey peeps, it's Eric, your host, interrupting real quick to say quick funny story. The show that we played was with Devin's band Stairwell C, but left before they played. I'm feeling a lot of shame.
But I like that venue too. I thought it was actually cool. Like yeah. There was a pretty good draw, pretty good turnout there. And the room like sounded good. I think they had a better PA than Rebel Sound. That was the only thing that I had against Rebel Sound is that I thought the like the PA couldn't really keep up with how loud they let the bands play.
No.
So it was really hard to like, you had to be right ear up to the speaker to hear vocals there. And maybe it wasn't a huge deal for some bands, but I feel like when you go to listen to a band that like has an actual singer, you're like, I want to hear that live. And if I'm like screaming along, like maybe I don't care how loud it is, but I think that was one that I feel like is always a tricky thing when you're trying to compete with how like loud some of these dudes, especially touring bands, come in and they're used to playing maybe these bigger venues. They've got like Marshalls cranked to like 15 and you're like, that is a lot. That
the room's like 20 by 20.
Yeah. You're like, we don't need all that. And the drummer is like playing as hard as they possibly can. And then so the guitar player's like, I got to turn up. The singer's like, I might as well go fucking outside. No one's going to hear me.
I think every show I ever played there, I was the singer. And it was very frustrating, I think, at the time for that. But you're right. Chameleons had like a pretty good system. And I think Andy was booking stuff there. I think it I think that was really like after Rebel Sound, it was just that for a little while, like before he moved away again. Yeah. I think Greg Ginn from Black Flag played there, like his solo, like noise project played there.
Nice.
That was pretty cool. But yeah, it was mostly.
Something happened there. That's why they stopped doing shows, right?
I think there was like a shooting, but was that one of those like hip hop nights or stabbing or something like that?
Yeah.
You know what they used to do, which I always thought was weird, was under 21 dances. They did like shows that were like under 21. So they would like shut the bar down and do that, which I guess is cool, but I think they were like still serving kids.
No, they all just showed up drunk.
Pre-game.
It's not around anymore, so I can say that.
Drink in the parking lot like a real punk.
I know, right? Fuck, get drunk
for real.
Hell yeah. I wanted to ask if you, each of you separately, were putting together a reunion show for whatever local bands from whatever eras.
Oh, damn.
What would you want to see come back?
How many bands? Because I don't book more than a 4-band bill. I won't do it.
Four.
I'm too old for that. Okay, four? All right.
Four.
Let me think about it.
I was going to say three, but four.
And the neighbors are all away.
Four. I'm like, fuck it. Give us four.
Shit. I put myself in a bad space. Peyton, you want to go first?
No. honestly, I would like to see them now because whenever I saw Adora, I was always playing with them and I was like loading out or breaking my drum set down. And I don't think I ever really paid attention to who or what they were other than like Terrence's band. So like, yeah. I wouldn't mind actually seeing Adora when Adora was like, you know, spinning guitars into each other's eyes.
Hell yeah.
And
I think that was the first band I ever saw do a, like a guitar spin. I was like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. They're like all doing it.
I was actually talking to Josh earlier today because I found so he's like big shot producer now out in LA area, and I found a tape that he and I recorded for this local band called the Clarity Girls in 01. And we recorded it at their house, and I sent it to him, the 4-track tape, and I was like, this was your first credit. I got you your first credit right here as my co-producer. This is it. So anyway, we had a funny conversation about that. He's like, this unlocked some core memories for me today.
It wasn't that bad either. He played it for us, and I'm like, I kind of dig this.
So we have one out of six bands.
Sorry,
yeah, I just three because he Devin said
I put myself.
Yeah.
So probably 3:15 because I feel like that's what everyone would want to see. I've spent a crap ton of time hanging out with Derek, so that makes a lot of sense.
American Lies.
No. Oh, jeez.
Dead rats.
I was gonna say, honestly, just for just grimy Pittsfield punk sake, Bare Bones.
Yeah. Dude, you stole mine.
You can say you Bare stole Bones mine, too. Pat.
Yeah, I would do Bare Bones. I would do maybe After Your Time, but Cock Explosion. If you ever listen to that band, that band was so good.
Who was in Cock Explosion?
Rest in peace, Gavin. That was a couple of younger guys. They were closer to my age. There was another band called Splatterhouse. They played at Source. That was Pat and Sean's younger brother, Matt, who was also in Rasputin, had a band called Splatterhouse.
Yeah.
Okay. Right on.
And it was like all those dudes. It was like this kid, Gavin, sang. Nick, oh my God, I can't remember who.
What was Jake? Was their guitarist?
Jake. So I loved that band. They were like a year older than me, and that was like a big one for me. So Cock Explosion, I would do Bare Bones, I would do 3:15, and I would probably do Doki Doki Panic or Dead Rats.
Doki Doki Panic. Ryan will appreciate that.
At some point in time,
this
show might have actually existed.
Yeah, it did. That's 100%. It did.
That show did happen at some point.
Somebody has a VHS tape of that somewhere. And they probably sold it at Source of the Nile after. Right next to the hair weaves.
Eric.
I've got some of them. They're kicking around. I put some of them on YouTube.
I want more.
It's a lot.
More on YouTube.
I have a second VCR dedicated just to hook up to my computer to pull stuff off. I just got lazy.
My videography skills are so quality.
Truth.
I have a VHS of the first Dave Stock. I don't know if any of you guys ever went to any of those shows.
That sounds familiar.
I'm like younger than you guys. I'm like,
everyone's younger than Bill.
A class or two below you guys. But we had these really great hardcore shows. The first one was like in this kid, Dave. Dave played a band called Medicine Man in like the mid 2010s. I don't know if you ever played with or saw that band. That band was really, really good. And he had a couple of different projects, but his like parents went away and they had like one show in his like, he had like this like this small room, and then it had two steps up into like this living room, and the bands played like in the living room, and the two steps were like a stage, and like kids were like putting themselves through the walls. I mean, it was really, really bad. And so instead of his mom saying never again, she moved it to the barn. And then it was, you know, we had like three or four different Dave Stocks that were in the barn, and they were
Dave Stocks were usually metal focused.
Well, a lot of horses, yeah,
generally, but no, but a lot of metal bands.
No, but like Cock Explosion played like every single one of them, you know. But there was, I guess you're right. I guess there was a little bit more of that. But there was some hardcore punk before everything kind of stopped.
That's a wicked rad mom there. That would be like, okay.
No, oh my God, she was not happy that yeah. happened. And instead of saying never again, she was like,
go to the barn.
If you want me to digitize that VHS recording for you, let me know. I got you.
I gotta pull it out of storage. But I have video footage of like the kid who put himself through the wall, and I know who he is. I'm not gonna dox him here, but
whoa. After the pod.
He owes some people some drywall money.
Inflation is hit though, man.
I was going to say, man, but that was like 2009 drywall money or some shit like that.
There's always money in the banana stand.
Yes, there is.
Didn't we have a lot of conversation about drywall when we had Brendan on from all like the parties at Jill's dad's house?
Oh, God.
Put people through the wall with the...
Oh yeah, the treadmill. People want to get on the treadmill and like turn it all the way up and just end up through the wall. We're trying to sell this place. I mean, drywall.
And then we got caught that one night because her fucking stepmom showed up. They were getting divorced. She didn't have a fucking right to be there. It was an empty house.
Andy, you're doxing their like life right now.
Yeah.
She was a fucking bitch.
Poor Jill's
still mad about Jill. That show.
Yeah.
She was a fucking bitch.
And he's hot tonight.
He's fired up.
He's fired up because Vinny came down and he was feeding him peanuts for like 5 minutes.
Eat one peanut at a time, dry roasted.
Sleepy time teas, making him all hot and bothered.
Right. And Vinny came down, classic Vin. Hey, Dad. I'm like, oh, God.
How cinematic do you have your camera set, Andy?
Because I don't know how to change the settings.
Handing peanuts to Vinny,
it zoomed out. Vinny's standing there shirtless, like eating peanut.
Because he's like, can I have some? So I just put some in my hand. He's taking them one at a time. I'm like, take them all, Vin. Like, for the love of God. He's like, why? You're holding them. I'm like, just fucking, I don't want to hold them.
I thought I was watching one of those punk rock show tapes. What video is this? The Slick Shoes? Must be.
It's not one that I've seen.
All right, so what are we looking forward to now? Like, what are the upcoming shows? Do you want to plug them now?
Let me pull up my notes. So we actually right now have a second venue and potentially for 2025 a third.
Oh,
so big news!
Is that the barn or no?
dropping on the
almost?
I wish it feels like it. Dropping hot news on the pod.
Right on.
So we have a second venue that we've been using. It's called Steel Wool is the name of the venue. It's a friend of ours, another guy from Brooklyn, actually.
Right on.
He owns this really great furniture, like mid-century modern shelving company. I'm going to shout it out because they're awesome. It's called Luca House. If you go on Instagram.
I fucking know him.
Yeah, Luca
He's
House.
Good so shit, yeah.
Luca is the fucking best. And he hit us up and he said, hey, I have a warehouse space. I'm only using like half of it for my business and I want to do shows in the other half. So we have this killer warehouse where we do like heavier shows and we do, you know, kids can mosh and it's awesome. And, you know, we kind of have to keep it a little more tame at Hot Plate, but Steel Wool's been great. We have a couple of shows. They are not announced yet, but I'm going to tell you anyways. January 11th at Steel Wool, we have a couple bands on tour, Voices in Vain and Jealous Mind. And we have a couple other bands playing, some Albany hardcore coming to town. So that's going to be pretty sick.
Nice.
And then the end of the month on the 31st, we have Oolong. They're from New Jersey. And Jockey, they're a band on tour from Texas. and there were Sinking's actually playing that show. That's probably one of the only times you'll get to see Sinking in town.
Awesome.
In the foreseeable future. And then we have another one in the beginning of February at Hot Plate. That's going to be still booking that, but we're pushing things out, and we have those two venues going on, and we have potentially a third that we're working with right now to do some shows, and they are, you know, really stoked to let us kind of do whatever. So,
awesome.
You know, we're working on that for 2025, and hopefully one or two more shows. We did a big show at Zion, the church at the Common. We did a big hardcore show there at the end of the summer with Restraining Order and Scud and a couple other bands. We had like five or six bands on that show, and that was awesome. We had like almost 200 kids show up for that show, which was incredible. So I'm hoping to do one or two more of those kind of bigger one-offs if we can call in the favors. Hayden, what else do we have? What do you got to say?
I got nothing. This whole Silver Lake thing is your idea. I got nothing.
Are you going to go to the shows, Peyton? Or
I go where Devin tells me to. Yeah,
he has to go.
He gives me the schedule and I show up.
That's what's up.
Luke is the shit, and his space is fucking huge.
Have you been in his?
Oh yeah,
in his.
I was the agent that leased it to him.
Nice. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Hey, find us more spaces.
I need to talk. I need to talk to you.
That building is empty.
Oh, yeah, we know. I need to talk to you because we need a space in that building. Because our huge goal ultimately would be to have our own space that we can just constantly have shows at. So that's like the dream. But Andy, I'm going to talk to you.
Yeah, it's a fucking massive space. There's so many spaces.
There's seven buildings.
It was all like Berkshire Artisan back in the day. Yeah. Jared Porter's dad. I tried not to dox him. I only said
that's pretty good.
It was all Berkshire Artisans. His dad was basically this wicked cool dude that used to just go travel places and pick shit up and sell it. And it was like he had leased like all those spaces, and then he closed shop. And it's like it's just massive warehouse spaces that are empty.
It's I think Lucas said there's like seven buildings on the property, and they have like eight or nine tenants in the entire of the seven buildings. Yeah. It's so empty, and there's so much potential. And I think it was at one point the largest wool factory in like the East Coast or in America.
For real?
A big thing. Yeah, that's why we call it.
Long time ago.
That's why we call it steel wool, because it's in the old wool factory. So we got to do like cool hardcore.
I like it.
Punk roots names. So, we're looking for, for some potential maybe there in the future, but we're still doing some steel wool shows there and trying to get kind of heavier bands kids can mosh to. And
that's dope. Fun.
Awesome. Well, I think this was good for us to get something a little bit more modern in terms of our discussion, because we went like down a weird rabbit hole where we went way further back than we ever anticipated going. So it was cool to kind of fast forward a little bit through. And, I think we're going to continue to do these episodes with more and more folks that can help just like plug in a small little piece, unlock a core memory, bring a little nostalgia, but also let us know like in current state, like where do we go check things out? We want to see local music, places to go. So greatly appreciate what you all do. And it's not an easy thing. It's probably really a thankless job in a lot of ways, but the fact that you're putting it together and doing it regularly is really cool. So thank you
awesome.
So much for doing that.
Yeah.
And we will try to be better fans at supporting this, but I think we're just sort of so out of the loop with everything. We don't know what's cool or who to find. So now that we have a little bit of an in, we'll make sure that we're more representative of your audience.
100%. The Halloween show was a perfect gateway.
It was incognito. So awesome.
We could feel it out.
I'm glad.
Perfect.
Those are my favorite. It's like it's in the like the punk tradition to do like a Halloween cover set, and we don't ever have cover bands, but everyone just taking the time to learn a Alkaline Trio set or a Blink set or whatever it is from bands who are like actively doing other things, and they take the time to do it for us. That's really cool. And I honestly like I had such a blast this year. I want to do AFI again. We did the Get Up Kids last year, and that was really, really fun. But AFI was that was a blast.
That was a banger of a set.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, Bill like jumped over a table to get up there for a couple of tracks.
Yeah, I might have knocked over some stuff. I'm so sorry.
I saw
I told the band, because some of the band, most of them aren't from Pittsfield, just me and the bass player Nate. And I suggested AFI like earlier in the year. I was like, we got to do AFI this year. Let me just like do my Davey Havoc thing. I want to so badly. I was like, please just let me do it. And they were like, why? Nobody knows AFI. No one cares. I was like, dude, everybody in Pittsfield knows AFI.
Yeah. There's definitely one old head there that's going to be flying
and
around.
And there was like, and everybody, you guys were singing like every song. So it was great. And so I turned around to my guitar player, Dane, and I was like, I fucking told you, dude.
At one point I looked over. I felt
vindicated.
Andy was headbanging so hard that his wig had come off. It was just like flailing in the wind. So I was like, Andy's digging it for sure.
Bill, were you a slice of pizza? Who was a slice of pizza?
I was a slice of pizza, yeah. Okay. I was a pizza pirate?
Pizza pirate. That's right. Yeah. So my wife was standing right in the front and she was taking a bunch of videos. And in the corner of every video is just Bill singing every song as a pizza. It's awesome.
There's a pizza bopping around.
Yeah, it's great.
He was Lottie more pizza. He was more delivery than DiGiorno, we'll say.
Yeah.
We appreciate that about Bill. Yeah, you know. I gas you up every now and then.
Yeah, you're right. I appreciate that. That was so fun though. Like everybody did such a good job.
Appreciate you guys coming out. That's like our big fun banger of the year. I mean, it usually sells out but I will say, you know, shout out to the Pittsfield scene. The kids are really coming out and they come to every show, and you know, Peyton and I are surprised at every show how many kids continue to show up. You know, that place holds 100 kids and we usually have between, you know, 60 and 85 on an average show come and paid. And that's even for touring bands. That's for people. I mean, it's really, really awesome. So if I can, you know, just thank you to Pittsfield for continuing to come and don't stop, because we need to keep doing it.
And hopefully we can get some of them as fans of the podcast and they can trace back the roots of some of the Pittsfield scene, because I think that's also an important piece. Because I think there are these like these roots that run really deep, and even we don't know them fully, but there was a really cool time in Pittsfield to be in bands. And I think this is the second coming of that.
Yeah.
These kids need to learn a thing or two.
Devin and Peyton, like, thank you guys for continuing the scene when it did seem like it was, you know, like on life support. Like, you guys really have done a Herculean effort. And
it's mostly Devin. He picked me up along the way. He one night needed a sound guy and I was like, yeah, I got a PA. And then now it's just, I'm always there.
Well, we still appreciate Peyton.
He's in the group chat. He's hosting the holiday party on Tuesday. We've got a little Silver Lake holiday party.
Nice.
That's true.
So he's like full elder member. He's been around since before everybody else, at least as far as our group goes. So, you know.
Awesome.
Don't let him be so modest.
I am the oldest head in the group.
Yo, I feel you, dude.
I'm not that old. Calm down.
He's like, I don't fucking know who Margaret Thatcher is.
Do you get an AARP discount on the PA? Are you getting things for Miracle Ear in the mail yet?
Yeah, but I feel like that's a lot of union stuff. You know what I mean? Those guys, they start sending you those cards way before you need them.
Fair enough.
Some of y'all.
The work you're doing is killing you. Here, you need some extra life insurance?
Yep.
All right, folks. Well, it's been real. And we'll talk to you again soon. Have a good night, everyone.
Bye.
Later.
Bye.
Night.